This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh, and our guest this morning on Pressing Matters is Sharon Tan. She's a writer with the Malaysian Insight. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you. This is your first time, but I'm sure it's going to be a pleasurable one. So we're going to begin with the story that you wrote for the Malaysian Insider, part of several stories that have been showcased on that portal on the real economy, as it were, and the real lives of people as they struggle with the high costs of living. And you had a very catchy headline. It read, "The Economics of Ikan Kembung." And this is not so much the business of Ikan Kembung, but it's on the other end of it, isn't it, Joyce?
Yes. It's interesting because you picked Ikan Kembung, Sharon, as a topic to wrap around the whole, you know, the whole subject of economics. And what prompted you to write this article?
The editors forced us to do that.
The editors forced you to write it.
Did it not appeal to you at the start? I mean, was there any resistance on your part? And if so, why? Why would you say no to Ikan Kembung?
No resistance, actually. The backstory to this was there was an editorial meeting, and then some of my colleagues came up and said that, you know, people are saying that kembung are more expensive, more people are eating chicken now because it's cheaper than fish. So I wasn't even at the editorial meeting. Yeah. So when I walked in, and then my editor, Debbie Low, just said that, okay, we got this story for you because I go to the market and I cook. So it will be most suitable for me. So
it did strike you as, I mean, on an intuitive level, that there was a story in it. Being somebody who does go to the market and, you know, and sort of buying the raw materials that go into so many of our dishes, you know, knowing the price of, you know, a kembung or even things like onions. I mean, if you ever go to the supermarket or a shop to buy onions, you'll be sometimes astounded by the cost of something as simple as an onion.
Absolutely. Many times, like, why is it so expensive now? So when I got this story, it was like, okay, it's good to go. I could just find a market that is more, more mass, and to get this type of comparison. So I chose to go to PJO Market, and that's how I started talking to people.
So what did you find out? Could you share with us?
Spoke to a few people, and then I asked them if they have changed their diet, eating more chicken or you know, less fish. And then it turns out that, you know, there are people who don't like chicken, but they have like reduced the amount of fish that they buy. And so I went on towards Ikan Kembung because it's like, you know, that was what people were saying, it's more expensive. And true enough, it's like the prices have gone up, and it was like 16 to 22 ringgit for fresh, yeah? And for the frozen ones, it ranges from 11 to about 15 ringgit.
So that's extraordinary, considering, and what you say this in your article, that this is a fish that was kind of seen as a kind of working class fish, I mean, or food for the poor, rather, or for the lower middle income groups. Right? This was not an expensive fish. This is not your dory or your salmon or what?
Yeah, this is really considered the poor man's fish. Years ago, I think. Yeah, but I used to feed my cats with it.
So now the cats don't deserve...
No, not at all.
So did you go talk to the fishmongers and all that? Why did the price increase?
Yes, I did. The fishmonger told me that, of course, they blame it on the GST. But again, this fish has no GST, yeah? But he said that because of the transport cost services there, and also the exchange rates, some of it are imported from Thailand and Indonesia. So that has increased the price.
Do you take the explanations from your, you know, the people you speak to at face value? I mean, isn't it possible that somebody is using an excuse to just to make profits where they need not, you know? I mean, in the sense that they're just kind of inflating. They're taking an opportunity because everybody kind of blames GST for everything, right? So do you take them at face value?
I do. I don't see a reason that they are, you know, saying otherwise. Yeah.
Well, also, you also wrote about stories of families. You wrote another article on families that are earning below a certain pay range, right, and how they are surviving and with the cost of living going up. So could you share with us on that, how that what you found from that article?
Well, that was a collective effort after the Kembongnomics. So we decided to do a story on how people are stretching the ringgit. So it was interesting to find. We decided on 3,000 to 4,000 pay, yeah. And it was very interesting that to see how people are managing with that amount.
So this would be the collective income of an entire family.
Yes, yes.
You know, I was actually surprised. One of the things that that jumped out at me from your story was the idea that people were buying half a fish. You know, I think and somebody says that, you know, they don't always buy a whole fish now. And it just seemed extraordinary that people would actually just buy half a fish. That saving was so important to them.
Yes. I think if you... Okay, like over the weekend, I was just told that tenggiri costs 54 ringgit per kg now. So it makes no... well, if you're watching your purse, you know, it's a lot. So you would just buy like maybe half or pieces.
Right. Yeah. In fact, if you notice, if you go to some of these restaurants where you're used to getting your banana leaf rice and then you get a little bit of tenggiri, is the price have remained the same, but the pieces have actually shrunk. Right?
Yes.
I mean,
it's getting
thinner and thinner and smaller and smaller, yeah, right? I mean, this would just be with almost all our protein. What a lot of the restaurants do is they don't increase the price because people are price sensitive, but they actually decrease the portions.
Yes,
that's true. Even if you just talking about a piece of fish, but a plate of char kway teow, if last time if it was like 5 ringgit, it probably could be still 5 ringgit, but the portions have shrunk.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So when you Sharon, when you spoke to all these families, what are they doing to manage this whole rising cost of living?
Okay, most of them are, you know, they all live within their means, yeah. And most also have like a second job, a part time job, just to, you know, to make things a little bit easier.
Right, I understand that. I also wonder about, I mean, this is the other side of that story about Kembong, is that Kembong, and if it's true that they're going to add it onto a price control list, you know, that this would be the second protein that's on that list. And I'm wondering if, you know, the nutritional impact of the high cost of living, you know, how much protein do we actually need? I'm sure a lot of vegetarians will tell you don't really need that much protein, at least not this kind of protein. But still, what is the nutritional impact, especially on young kids, if they're not going to get, or protein becomes too expensive for families to have it on a regular basis?
Oh, I have to get back to you on that because I wasn't even looking at the nutritional value side of things.
Yeah, but I think Sharon's article, you did write about how some of them, they cut down on like milk powder and lean and things like Milo.
Yeah, because, you know, it was expensive.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that has
also
been adjusted.
And then they buy, yeah. So like the family who used to buy Anlene, they would buy another brand now. And they will only buy Anlene again if there is a sale.
Right.
Okay, by the way, we're tweeting out the links to the stories that Sharon and her fellow writers at the Malaysian Insider produce. So you can, if you haven't read them, you can always pick it up on our feed. You know, if you haven't joined us, we are at BFM Radio. That's BFM_radio. And if you have questions for Sharon, you can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Now, where do we go with this story? I mean, you have looked at a particular group of people, and we're going to come back after this break and get more on your story. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me Joyce Goh, and welcome back to Pressing Matters. Our guest this morning, Sharon Tan, writer with the Malaysian Insight, and we were looking at her story earlier on Kembong and the implications of the rising cost of Kembong. And now we're going to be looking at the stories that she and her colleagues at the Malaysian Insight have been doing on the real economy. We'll look at stretching the ringgit. Now, because we know it's a polymer note, so I don't know if it stretches as much as it could if it was made of, say, rubber. But because it isn't, let's look at some of the issues that were brought up in the stretching the ringgit articles. I think two of them, the links of which will be tweeting out to you. Now, in these articles, the Malaysian Insight looked at households of 5 to 7 people whose combined earnings were between 3,000 and 4,000. The households with a monthly income of less than 3,900 were also considered part of the B40, or the bottom 40% in terms of the demographics. They also looked at households with the same combined income bracket, but with fewer members, to see what their challenges were. Now, why did you choose the B40, Sharon, in terms of the target group?
Okay, I think we just like plucked the number 3,000 to 4,000, and
it sort of coincides with the B40.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, B40 is the biggest number in the country anyway. So yeah.
Right. So based on your interviews, how did these households categorize necessities and luxuries?
I think most things are necessities. Of course, you know, there was one guy, Sham. Buying crab is a luxury for him. And he always bought fish in a plate, you know, that they sell like 5 ringgit per plate or 10 ringgit per plate. And, you know, so it's things like that. And
But things like Wi-Fi also managed to be part of the list of things that are now considered necessities, right? Did you ever question the people you spoke to, and ask them why did they maintain, say, their television subscription and Wi-Fi subscription?
Okay, I did not actually. I know there's one family in Kajang that I spoke to. They have Wi-Fi, but yeah, I didn't ask. Yeah.
Right, so did they tell you like things about, how about income and emergencies, like side income and emergencies, things like that?
Well, there are a few that has savings that can, you know, tide them, but there are also many that have to rely on their families.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we spoke to, and we had on the grill actually, an economist from the World Bank as well as from a local think tank, and we were talking about BRIM. And so, you know, because the large numbers of BRIM recipients, and the question was, you know, does this mean we have such a large number of poor people? They said, well, you know, it's not a question of poverty, it's actually a question of vulnerability. So all these people, right, so they have their fixed income, and yes, you have your budget, but what do you do the day that somebody gets ill, say somebody who's a breadwinner who depends on going to work, who's not going to be covered by medical or their medical costs that are more than you're insured for. So vulnerability, I think, is really part of the story, right? But coming back to what you were looking at, I wonder if there is something to be said about the things that we've come to accept as necessities rather than luxuries. Do you think there'll be a time, Sharon, that people will be giving up the things like television and Wi-Fi just to accommodate the rising cost of living?
I think the first thing to go would be the TV, because
the TV subscription, like, yeah, to your...
I think it will go. But unless they have kids and they want to keep their kids entertained, I'm not sure. But I think TV will be the first to go.
Actually, I noticed from your article, so a number of them, also there's only one single income earner, and then the other, like the wife, will stay back and take care of the kids, right? So,
yes.
Like Sharad mentioned, if anything were to happen, do they have a backup? Do you think did they say anything on that?
Families?
Families. Yeah. So families, the network, networks are very important for especially the vulnerable, right? Sometimes you can, but also, you know, unfortunately, it would also be the along. And, you know, if you're an along and you're out there, I'm not running down your, don't spray red paint on my front door because, you know, it's all new. So, but isn't that also part of the equation for a lot of people in the B40? Because they can't go to banks to borrow money. They rely on these other ways of, you know, securing money, especially in a crisis.
There is a guy up in Kulim, backhoe driver. He, if he's in a fix, he will ask his boss for advance, and then it will be deducted from his salary. So, you know, these are the means and ways. And people sell their things.
They sell? Are they?
Yeah, there's a guy who sells his stuff online when he's in a fix.
Okay. Yeah. Or maybe going to a pawn shop. I think that was probably where jewelry might go, or even other valuables, right? So the pawn shop, and I don't know how, you know, we need to look at that as well to see, you know, whether there's been, in fact, greater numbers of people pawning their valuables in order to kind of...
Thanks for the story idea.
Welcome. We fellow journalists, you know, we've got to stick together. I do want to ask this question, though. I know we look often focus on the B40, but isn't there something to be said about the stories coming from the middle income group? The middle classes, they too are having to kind of tighten their belts, especially, say, if you take a family that's sending their kids overseas, right? The currency rates have changed dramatically. Won't they also have to dramatically cut down on their consumption or change their consumption patterns in order to accommodate those?
I think so. I think if we look at those earning from 6 to 10,000, I think there will be another set of problem there.
Yeah, I think they'll have to adjust their lifestyle accordingly as well.
So
yeah.
You change your supermarket. You go from a high-end grocery and you stop buying, bread at a patisserie, and then you go into...
Yeah, you don't buy the sourdough. You just buy the normal, bread. Perhaps.
But isn't that a reality for a lot of middle-class families? And if you're one of those middle-class families, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio. Apologize, there's no underscore. It's just BFM Radio. And WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Tell us your story when it comes to the rising cost of living. So coming back to it, so this is another story idea for you, Sharon, the middle classes and their woes.
Yeah. So when you speak, coming back to your story on this brim, the lower income group, do you feel like they are hopeful that things will get better?
I think they are trying to do their best to make things better in little ways in the time that they have. Most of the people that I spoke to have a job. So it is their weekends that are spent, earning extra income.
Right. The other thing, and this is a WhatsApp message has come in, says that the price of fish is also affected by nature. It's more difficult to catch fish now. So, the problems of overfishing and also maybe
weather
and also maybe even plastics, choking fish and destroying habitat. So maybe there's that element in the story. But I think, Sharon, your focus was whatever is the reason for the increasing price of fish, Malaysians will have to somehow accommodate them. That seemed to be the angle that you were going for.
Right. Yes.
What other essential items do you think demonstrate this precise dynamic for a lot of Malaysians? Apart from kembung, suggesting that you go beyond kembungnomics to maybe tempehnomics? Is that likely? Tempeh is not cheap, by the way.
Okay. Still,
but it's a great source of protein.
Protein, yes. I'm not sure what...
Other items it could be,
When you worked on the story, when you spoke to them, what are the things that that you found in the interview that surprised you?
I think the one story that was really surprising for me was this cleaner named Izan from Kajang, that she could save her entire salary, and they just live off her husband's salary. Wow. And combined salary, they have about 4,000, and they live such a simple lifestyle. She walked to work. The office is just behind her house, and they don't.
Does she have kids?
She has one child.
Okay. How old is the kid?
The kid is 12. Mm.
So school going. So maybe that's an example of an extraordinarily small and atypical family, right? Where you don't have transport costs.
Yeah.
Your child's needs are also quite limited because you only have one child. But that would not be the typical story, would it?
No, that was surprising for me. Then there was the other story of Sham, who is a civil servant. And on his weekend, he would service aircon and also join the, he's going to join the civil defense.
Oh, Rela?
Not Rela.
Like security thing, I think, when I read it.
Yeah, so he's going to join the civil defense next month. I know on weekend, he would go do stuff there and he get paid 6 ringgit an hour. So that's how then... he would be able to get a certain fixed income from weekends.
It's like extra income in a way.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Sharon, for joining us this morning. We're running out of time. We have tweeted out the links to your stories and the stories that the Malaysian Insight is bringing us on the kind of real economics of the country.
All right, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We're going to have the news and then we'll be back with Enterprise. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.